Welcome to On the Brink Radio. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson, once again coming at you from the big island of Shaky City, Hawaii. Shaky City has indeed come to visit here in the past couple of weeks, and I'm with the illustrious and ever articulate professor of electroseismology and other scientific areas of relevance to being here now, the very professor and doctor, Stuart the Effect Simonson. How the heck are you, my brother? You're in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, aloha. You're in Hawaii, right?
Absolutely, I'm still on the big island. Do you wish you were here now?
I wish I were there, absolutely. We had a fantastic time last August, and we stayed in Pahoa.
That's where I am.
We waited around the tide pools, which is probably 4 or 5 miles where the eruption is, lava's coming out of the ground, right?
Yes.
In someone's backyard.
Many people's backyard.
Yeah, many people. So that's kind of surprising because we had to drive 10 miles and then we had to bike 5 miles to get to the lava field, but I guess that old volcano just decided to pop up. I feel bad for the people there.
Yes, they evacuated all of Leilani Estates, which is 1,700 people, and just a couple of days ago, another nearby housing development. So Pele is on the move, but there's a lot of stuff going on here. I won't talk too much about that, but I wanted to ask your opinion on, we were talking about the concept of the Earth Strikes Back, which is the theme that I'm using for your painting.
Yeah.
The Earth Strikes Back, which implies that Mother Earth, as a conscious being, is tired of all the depredations and destruction and desecration being perpetrated by our species, Homo sapiens, and that she's taking action to defend herself and her family and eventually possibly to get rid of us. I think that this is actually in tune with the thinking of the Hopi prophecy, who talk about what they call the Day of Purification, a time when Mother Earth does cleanse herself of all that's out of balance. And they say that this has happened 3 times before. But we've got that aspect of the scenario. Then we've got another kind of opposing perspective that all the volcanic activity and all the earthquakes and all the large-scale upheavals and natural disasters and stuff, that all that is just Mother Earth and Mother Nature doing what they normally do, regardless of whether we're here or not. And it's like we're the ones giving meaning to it according to whether it affects us or our family or property or not. And then a third dimension is the possibility, and this hinges on the main topic of what all our interviews have been about before, and along with Terry Lilly, about the whole new paradigm of geophysical warfare, about how the world's military and corporate structure has the ability to wage war now beyond atomic weapons and through the weaponization of natural processes themselves, like storms, fires, droughts, tornadoes, volcanoes, earthquakes. So to me, what I wanted to ask you is, like, do you see sort of possible elements of all three of those happening now?
Yeah, so I'm glad we get a chance to talk about this, because my blog and some of my research, and by the way, Jeff, I'm an engineer. I'm not actually a doctor or scientist. So,
oh, yes, I know those were honorary titles I bestowed on you. But you are the effect.
Engineers are supposed to apply science. So I've been doing that for 32 years. So I keep an eye on nature. I love nature and the earth and all the critters. So I have a belief that nature and the earth is always creating itself. In other words, you know, volcanoes are just more of the earth creating new land.
Right? Giving birth to new land. It's a sacred process.
Yes, and I don't believe that all of a sudden the earth came into, say, being a few billion years ago and just is now sitting there spinning through space. I tend to believe that the earth is continuously creating and recreating, and that's why it loves creativity in people. In other words, it helped create us and all the cosmic forces, and we're just part of that. And that's why, you know, the creative juices, you're an artist, so you know that you get into the flow and you create. And I really think nature loves that. So I think there's this force of nature that's much more powerful than we are or where we'll ever be. And I think our society, or societies, and maybe capitalism is a big part of that, tend to ignore a lot of nature and the way nature works, and to our detriment. In other words, our kids aren't as healthy as they were 50 years ago. You know, autism rates just hit 1 in 50 children here in the U.S. So we're doing a lot of society and the way our governments work, they're not protecting our children. And I think you can only go on doing that for so long and going against nature. And at some point, nature will bite you in the ass.
Well, would you say
she will have her way with us at some point?
Yes. Would you say that it could be like if you look at Mother Earth as a living being, that, like, you know, if you look at a human being, if we get sick, your body starts going into different kinds of modes according to what's wrong with you to try to heal it. But the first thing that you try to do, or the first thing that your body tries to do, is do you try to figure out what it is that's making you sick and then get rid of that. And so if that's the human presence here, is Mother Earth eventually gonna have to do that? I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think she already is. In other words, I think we are not, environmentally good environmental stewards. And I think a lot of the diseases and all are, you know, a lot of them are environmental related. A lot of them are the foods that we're producing. And so, in a way, nature's already striking back. And we are, I think humans are very good at denial.
Yes.
And, you know, you can put on a good sales and marketing job and, deny the reality. I think humans are, denial is a very big part of our society.
Absolutely.
Which is unfortunate.
But isn't it true?
You know, they'll deny wrongdoing, and then they force you to sue them, and even then they will deny wrongdoing.
Yes.
Same with the military.
Well, isn't the U.S. Navy?
You can sue them, and then, you know, they settle out of court and never admit any wrongdoing. So you would think nobody ever did anything wrong.
The U.S. Navy, but aren't they the environmental stewards of the planet? They have all these videos that say that.
Yeah, and that's their sales and marketing department telling you that. And, you know, quite honestly, I work with a lot of military guys. My parents are in the military. And one of the guys I work with is an ex-Navy pilot, officer, instructor. And he said, you don't hire the Air Force or the Navy unless you want to kill something. In other words, they specialize in destroying things. And no, they're not good stewards of the ocean and nature. They are trained to destroy, and that's what they do. And, you know, we can be in denial about it and all, but that's the way it is.
Yes, well, how about this? And Terry Lilly, who I'm actually doing an interview with later today, who you've come down and dived with before, he makes the point that because of especially this new generation of microwave weapons and the weaponization of the cathodic protection systems that you and I have talked about before, that's electrifying the whole ocean environment, that just the presence of these warships and the presence of military technology, it's just being there with it all plugged in is waging a form of war in itself and kills things wherever it goes, even if it's not actually firing its weapons or quote unquote waging war. You know, just the amount of all the stuff that there is.
Yeah, they're putting a tremendous amount of voltage into the seawater and the atmosphere, and, you know, leaving a trail of destruction. So they can deny it, they can do whatever, but it's true. And, you know, that northwest shore of Kauai, where Terry dives every day, and I dived with him, the coral was 80-90% dead. You know, here's tourists coming from all over the world to beautiful Kauai, and the place is dead. And, you know, the cliffs under the radars are bright red from all the oxidation and corrosion, and it's all fallen into the reef, and the reef's all dead. So, you know, it might look good in the postcard, this beautiful, unnatural-looking red cliff, but in reality, it's just being cooked.
Absolutely.
So that's what, you know, Terry's got all sorts of data and video, and, you know, fish turning black and whales, sharks floating in belly up.
Turtle flippers.
And the Navy just denies it, you know, unless you get a video of them actually doing it. They're innocent.
It's climate change that's done it.
You know, they had 150 or so birds drop right around the 4,500 watt radar station. That's the average power. Maximum power is like 25,000 watts. And they blamed it on the 100 watt light bulbs.
Yes.
I said, no, you dumbasses. It's the 4,500 watt microwave oven that you've got pointed up. And, you know, they'll deny it. You know, they gave themselves an environmental reward for putting out another radar to track the birds.
Absolutely. Well, look, let me ask you this. Terry said, we were talking about the giant record rainfall there on Kauai 3 weeks ago, that by some estimates I've read there was over 49 inches of rain, or 1,500 millimeters in less than 24 hours. And I think I shared this with you, that Terry said that he's seen storms like that before, but this is something he'd never seen in 30 years, that the storm stalled at the mountain ridge, and it stalled there for over 24 hours, and it dumped all that rain, but that on the other side of the mountain, where the Pacific Missile Range facility is, they didn't have one drop of rain. What does that tell you?
Well, maybe it's on the dry side of the island as part of it, but you know what? To be honest with you, from my viewpoint, the military is not that smart. In other words, they definitely try to control the spectrum and say that they command all the frequencies in the spectrum, and, you know, they don't talk about the downsides of that, and they would like to control the weather, but I don't give them that much credit.
Well, how about this? What if it's not them? What if they've handed it all over to supercomputers and they're the ones doing it?
Say that again?
What if they've handed all this over to supercomputers who are now running the global geophysical weather engineering and all this stuff? I mean, I really think that there's an element of truth to that.
Well, I think they're definitely trying to control the weather and, you know, use all of nature as their weapon if they can. You know, that's what they did with E equals MC squared and nuclear power, right? So I definitely think they would like to, but I don't give them that much intellectual credit.
Yes.
And, but, you know, lasers, they've already proven if you point lasers up at the sky, at times you can trigger lightning and you can trigger discharge. So they're definitely having an impact, okay?
Yes.
You know, they're putting 30, 40 megawatts of pulsed power up into the atmosphere, and that's a shitload of power, Jeff. And, yeah, it's probably giving a lot of birds cancer or diseases or whatever. And, you know, a lot of the native bird species are disappearing on Kauai. So,
yes.
That's the part where humans are in denial. You know, we're killing off species left and right. And 25% of our national budgets going to military spending, and I think it's bizarre. I think it's wrong.
It's sick. Did I tell you that I learned that the USS Portland is the boat that's going to be the flagship for RIMPAC this year, and they're going to have a debut test of this giant laser weapon that they've bolted onto the deck of it.
Yeah, you know, it's just dumbass bullshit. In my opinion, it's just a bunch of immature kids playing with destructive toys.
But they've got lots of testosterone seething through their veins. But how about this? What about that? After the military used 58 Tomahawk missiles on Syria a few weeks ago, 2 days later, the stock for Raytheon, Boeing, and Lockheed all surged just because. And I likened it to when Bjorn Borg wore Reebok tennis shoes to win the tournament. You know, it's like an advert for their product.
Yeah, no, it is. You know, and the media backs it up and, you know, puts the Tomahawks blasting off. And, you know, so society is supporting all that, right? The whole military, I call it the military media industrial complex because it's all connected, right? So is it in the long term and the big picture doing anything for humanity? No, it's keeping it basically going backwards, I think.
Well, if you think of, I did a little research into this a few weeks ago. 4% of the population of Hawaii works for the military.
40%?
No, 4.
4%,
yeah,
okay.
But that's still pretty significant. But when you think of the tens of millions of people that are not only enrolled, you know, in the military of different types, but that work for the defense contractors and all the subcontractors and the bureaucracy and stuff, it would be a lot of people. And there's a lot of money involved. It's the biggest industry on the planet. And
You know what I loved about the Big Island was the coral reefs are in beautiful shape there. I dived all around the island, and there's very little military and commercial shipping and all, but, you know, go up to Kauai, and the reefs were 80% dead, and what's the difference? Well, I think it's the military.
Yes.
And, you know, so you can call it global warming, which is, you know, I think that's
a hoax.
A bunch of crap.
We do have a lot of depleted uranium that's been deployed here up at this military thing in between and the saddle between Mauna Loa and Mauna Kea. But yeah, you're right. There's not a lot. There's no Pearl Harbor here. There's no PMRF.
Right. Yeah. So a lot less of that going on, and so I think that's got a big part of it. And like I said before, I'm not claiming that humans aren't put some CO2 up and it's having a little effect, but, you know, Kilauea is probably putting as much CO2 up right now as, you know, the whole island did in the last few years.
Exactly. And did you know that the atmosphere of Mars is 90 or 95% carbon dioxide?
Yeah.
And so how come it's not boiling hot there? Because they're so far from the sun, I guess.
So I noticed a couple things. Back in the Jurassic period, they said CO2 levels were 5 times as high, so they're like 2,000 parts per million.
Wasn't it up to 9,000 ppms?
Yeah, it was a couple thousand ppm. I think it's 400 now, or a little over. And they said coral reefs had spread throughout the world, so...
And plants?
You know, and yes, it was a little warmer, a little more tropical, and, you know... People are going to have to sell their ocean homes, but it didn't kill everything. You know, heat, I don't think a little heat kills everything.
No.
You know, some places could use a little heat. And, you know, that's the other thing I think about nature. So I think all this flooding and severe, you know, we had a couple bad, just tremendously, you know, hurricane, I think it was Harvey that hit Texas. It dropped 33 trillion gallons of water on the city of Houston or that area. And that's a hell of a lot of water. And so I think that has more to do with the earth and the sun and sunspots and, you know, what the space weather and solar weather is doing than it does just a tenth of a degree of heat.
Yes.
Well, now, and so
I wanted to ask you about this scientist named Walter Monk, who turned 100 a few weeks ago. And what do you know about this guy?
Not much, actually. I could Google him.
Well, but this article in the New York Times said he was like the Einstein of the oceans. But he's worked for the Navy at Scripps Institute for like 50 years and has been behind a lot of the most invasive technologies and projects. Like, he was one of the masterminds behind this idea to drill a hole down into the Earth's mantle. And it failed. It was called Project Mohole. It was like back in the 60s and stuff like that. I wasn't sure how much you knew about him. But let me ask you this.
He passed away.
No,
right?
No. He just turned 100 a few weeks ago.
This says he passed away on Sunday, April 1st.
Really?
Walter Monk, yeah.
Unless
this is a different Walter Monk.
Well, no, this guy was just turned 100 back about around that time.
But, yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. Stuart.
Yeah, Roland Canadian. Yes, go ahead.
How many different kinds of war are there?
How many different kinds of war?
Yes, like how many different ways would you define war?
Like, you know,
right off the top of your head.
I would boil it all down to just one kind of war where one party's killing another. I don't think it's that complicated. So, I mean, there's different wages of waging war.
Yes.
But in the end, war's all the same, right?
Yes. Well, now let me ask you this. What do you know about Pele?
What do I know about Pele?
Or what do you think when you hear that name? Yes.
And soccer player, right? Was that Pele?
Really? Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, I don't know. I think we're going down the wrong path, and maybe even picking up speed.
Yes, we've got the pedal to the metal.
Pedal to the metal,
yeah. Yes.
But I don't give the geophysical, I mean, I do think a lot of most of the weapons have an impact on the geophysical, but is the military anywhere near controlling it? Or then I would say no. And are there Scripps Navy experts, good stewards of the ocean? I'd say hell no. You know, we got whales washing up all up and down the coastlines. We've got hypoxic zones the size of Rhode Island in the Gulf where nothing can live. So,
yes,
you know, if they really understood the ocean and were good stewards, they'd be on top of that, right?
Yes. Well, look, let me ask you a couple more questions, more right directly up your alley. What do you know about the next level of microwave stuff called 6G? And is that what they call millimeter waves? Or terahertz?
So, I mean, there's different bands, right? There's X band and K band and S band. So, of course, the higher the frequency, the shorter the wavelength, right?
Yes.
So I think you're really just talking about the higher frequency radiation. Because I know microwaves are like centimeter wavelength, so higher frequencies than that. And so, you know, I know a little bit about it.
Well, let me ask you this.
About the weapons?
Yes, but also, like, you know, the Wi-Fi transmitters and for telephones and stuff. But let me ask you this. Is there a boundary, if you're moving up the electromagnetic spectrum, is there a discrete boundary at which non-ionizing radiation suddenly becomes ionizing radiation because of the frequency or wavelength? Is that how it works?
So, here's what I know, and I've actually studied it quite a bit, so I don't, your body tends to, like AM radio waves, they propagate a long ways. They have large wavelengths, long waves, and they tend to penetrate. That's why ham radio operators and AM radio, you can pick it up hundreds or thousands of miles away, right? But what happens with the higher frequencies, they tend to get absorbed more by water molecules in your body, so they don't propagate as far. And so your body's absorbing that energy of the radiation in your body, which means the higher frequencies, you know, potentially can have more of an impact on your body instead of just passing through it. So that's part of it. Now, having said that, you know, you can take a 60 hertz, which is super low frequency, power line, and I know that because I've been studying some of this lately. If you up the voltage enough, you can ionize the nitrogen in the air with just 60 hertz, 500,000 volt power lines from a power plant and produce ultraviolet radiation. You follow me?
For real.
And ultraviolet radiation is higher frequency than visible. Your eyes can't see it, but it's ionizing. The sun puts out a lot of UVA and UVB, ultraviolet A and B, and that's what gives you sunburns, right? That's what tans you and gives you sunburns. And, you know, a little bit might be okay, a lot's not good for you. Too much triggers DNA damage and cancers and things like melanoma. So, but my point is, if you put enough voltage up into the air, you start ionizing, even at low frequencies, the nitrogen in air molecules. And that's what I've been, if you check my blog out, they've got an eye cancer cluster in Huntersville, North Carolina.
Yes.
And they have three high voltage transmission lines from the nuclear power plant running through the suburban area of this town. And they also have a pulsed radar station just to the south that we verified was installed 53 feet below what it was supposed to be. So, you know, 53 feet means instead of missing a house, it's now reflecting off homes.
Yes.
And schools about 3 miles away.
Why did they do that?
Why?
Yes.
Because they're dumbasses?
Well, but it was just because it maybe cost less to do that or something?
I think they made an error, but what they did is they turned it on and it cooked the electronics in a microwave tower 5.6 miles away. So they turned a section of it off, but they didn't turn the other 95% of it off. And we calculated that, yeah, they installed it 53 feet too low, and it's reflecting off the high school that's 3 miles away.
So you've got a post on your blog about this.
Yeah, I've got four or five, actually, and I've been talking to them. And but here's the thing. Those high voltage lines, of course, the radar is sweeping those also. So it's just more EMF and more voltage in the atmosphere. It triggers ionizing radiation, and that's the bad stuff, right? That's the stuff that knocks your DNA and molecules apart.
Yeah, because
it's got so much energy.
Yeah, exactly.
And those big power lines put off ultraviolet radiation, which can cause cancer. It's like sitting under a sun lamp, right? The atmosphere actually blocks a lot of the solar radiation, you know, the worst rays. I think we're ignoring nature, and that's why we've got a lot of our health problems, I guess.
Yes. Well, this is touching on what I was kind of hinting at when I asked you how many kinds of war there are, because the way I look at it is you can really say that a lot of things are the equivalent of our waging war. Like just the example you just gave, it's almost, if they were actually literally trying to destroy things, they might do a similar thing. But this was like by accident, but just through the use of the same technologies. And so if you look at how many different examples of this kind of thing there could be affecting humans and non-human life all over the world and all the different countries, and to me, that's a form of involuntary warfare that's the side effect of just the existence of all of our military-industrial technologies.
Absolutely. You know, these undeveloped countries, they don't have some of the diseases that we have in the developed countries, right? We're supposed to be the most advanced, yet we have 1 in 50 kids that may not make it to kindergarten, right? And that's like 100,000 children a year in the U.S. right now. You know, so are we really more advanced now?
It is advanced. It's advanced down the path of self-destruction.
Yeah, it's adding to self-destruction. But if you read the advertisements and the marketing brochures, they won't tell you that. You know, Kauai never changed their marketing brochure that said, you know, come to Kauai, we've got dead coral reefs.
No.
Never changed there.
Well, but here on the Big Island, you'll never see in the travel literature even a mention of the word VOG. To the travel industry, it doesn't exist. VOG, V-O-G, you know, the volcanic haze and smog. It's a big time thing here, but they don't even tell you about it.
Acid rain, or you know, the atmosphere's got sulfur in it, right?
Absolutely. Well, look, let me ask you this. This is kind of related to your area of knowledge, but also ties in with the volcanoes. Isn't it true that volcanic activity, lava flows, and also earthquakes have electromagnetic components or signatures or processes that happen even before? Like earthquakes have, they can shift the electromagnetic field in their area, or you know, the whatever it is that's helping the earthquake to form has an electromagnetic signature, even just in the world of nature. I'm not talking about any military influence. Isn't that true?
Yeah, so actually, and I've done, you know, I've got some posts on that.
Really? About volcanoes?
I actually do.
Yeah. Really?
Or at least earthquakes tied to electromagnetic.
Well, but see, but look, tell us about that right now.
Well, okay, so there's some good research papers that, you know, before the Japanese tsunami and earthquake in 2011,
yes,
the atmosphere over the area where the earthquake occurred,
heated up,
started giving off a lot of electrons.
Well, see, I thought that might have been HARP.
It was electrified, okay? But this is before the earthquake.
I thought that was an indication that it was being deliberately engineered.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to tell you it isn't, but I'll tell you there's a lot of other instances where they've picked up electric field increase in the ground,
yes,
or the atmosphere over the ground right before earthquakes. Okay.
Can I just share this? Let me share this really quick as a footnote. I didn't mean to interrupt your train of thought, but about 10 years ago, France put up a satellite called Demeter, D-E-M-E-T-E-R, and it was expressly designed to study earthquakes. And they started putting out all this information, and you can still access their data bank, but they had to take it down.
I've pulled it up before.
Have you? Well, see, but they said just around 1990, a new kind of earthquake started to appear. They called them modern earthquakes because it had a distinctly different electromagnetic signature, and that's just about the exact same time that HARP came online. So you've heard of Demeter?
Yeah. I've actually looked, you know, before a few of the earthquakes, they picked up pretty strong electric signals in the upper atmosphere, right?
Yes.
So
very interesting.
Yeah. So I was studying, you know, Oklahoma never had, they got like three earthquakes a year, and they're 1.5. They've had 3,000 earthquakes over the past 5 or 10 years. Of course, the fracking and all that's going on.
Well, yes.
But I don't think it's fracking. I think I have a theory, and I put it out there, and I have a research paper on it, Jeff, that what they're doing is the fracking wells aren't cause of most earthquakes. Actually, earthquakes are happening around the wells where they inject the fluid back into the ground.
Yes.
So I studied it, and what they do is they take these old wells that are no longer producing, and they pump the saltwater brine down. Well, you suck a lot of air down the pipe. When you pour water down an empty tube, you pull a lot of air in with it. So I have a theory that a lot of their earthquakes, and they're all in the 1.5 to 2 Richter scale range, they're not actually earthquakes, they're explosions. I think they're blowing up natural gas pockets because they're mixing air and natural gas, and then you've got electrical charge, you know, in the earth naturally. And so I think they're triggering, you know, have you ever tried to start a gas grill and not have it start immediately? And the gas builds up, and then your sparker all of a sudden goes off, and you get this big woof.
Yes.
So I think that's what's happening at the bottom of these wells, a mile below.
But it's accidental, right?
6 pounds of natural gas exploding in air to cause a 1.5 to 2 Richter scale detonation. You know, every once in a while in the suburbs around here, we have a house blow up because someone left their natural gas on in the house.
Yes.
And it mixes with the air. And then you get a spark, and it's a detonation. And you know, Google that, and you'll see that a lot of those detonations are 1.5 to 2 Richter scale detonations. And I think that's what's going on in Oklahoma. So my point is this. I think that earthquakes can be triggered by electrical power in the ground, because that's your ignition source. And if you have natural gas or other hydrocarbons in the ground, you now have a bomb. Okay, I think, now I'm not saying there aren't fault lines and all that involved too, but I think the reason they're having all these artificial earthquakes is all the voltage, well, it's air mixing with hydrocarbons, and that's a source of electrical current. You know, a well, if it's got a metal pipeline down to it, is a great conductor, right?
Yes.
So if you have any electrical voltage difference between the ground, you know, the surface, and a mile down, you're going to get electrical charge.
Yes.
So I think I think it's ignoring nature, right? We ignore the signs, and we think, you know, the military thinks they can pull into an area and put 5 or 10,000 amps into the seawater around their warships for cathodic protection and not have an impact on nature. And I think they're stupid.
Well, look, let me ask you this. Zoom out. Hold that thought about the electrical currents influencing earthquakes and zoom out and apply that on a larger scale. Say, like, if you look at the enormous amount of tectonic and volcanic activity happening all around the whole Pacific Rim right now, could there be electromagnetic influences, either natural and or military industrial, both on purpose or accidental, that are causally related to these? Or
yeah, I think it is. I think, you know, you look right now where, you know, the sun is having its most dormant period, and it's an 11-year cycle.
Well, and even bigger.
And they say usually the weather, it impacts the weather. So when the sun's the most quiet, we tend to have more storms and, like you said, more rain. We got 7 inches of snow in Atlanta this year. I've been here 30 years, and we've never seen that. And so, yes, I think that space weather, based on what's going on in the solar system, affects the Earth, which in turn, if you get more electrical charge in your atmosphere that's grounding out into the Earth, it's going to impact, or it very well could impact, things like volcanoes and earthquakes, because there's more electrical charge.
Yes.
You know, pulsing through.
Aren't we
I think it's all connected, and I don't think we should ignore that, right?
No. Well, look, aren't we also in a thing called the Maunder minimum, M-A-U-N-D-E-R,
yes,
which is like
minimum.
It's
11-year cycle, right?
Well, no, Maunder minimum is much longer than that. It might even
it's
tens or hundreds of years. It's an ultra low, and we're at an 11-year low in the sunspot cycle, but the Maunder minimum is even lower.
Yeah.
a much longer cycle.
Yeah, it could trigger like a little mini ice age or cooling period. And, you know, we just had the coldest, longest winter here probably, and it's been a nice cool spring, and they had a long winter in Maine. So, yeah, I think, you know, I kind of have this theory that, you know, and you got to read my blog some more, the weather piece of it, but that we're actually in a vacuum. You know how they, you know, the quantum vacuum that they talk about? That there's a lot of energy that impacts our weather that is actually coming from space itself or space-time itself.
Is this the zero-point energy?
Yeah, that we're in a vacuum. We actually live in a vacuum, and that you've heard of inflation cosmology? You heard of inflation?
Absolutely.
They say the universe inflated out of a point in space or whatever you want to think. But I tend to think that maybe the universe, and they say it's expanding all the time, right? The universe is expanding, and it's actually accelerating in the expanding, which tells me it's still growing and it's still undergoing inflation, right?
Yes, but
that's why. So what I have this theory that what really is triggering our storms is inflation. In other words, the atmosphere, the gas in the atmosphere, is actually inflating with more entropy. Because that's what zero-point energy and black holes could be like, made of entropy. And when you expand a gas, you cool it off, right, Jeff? I'm an engineer, so when you compress a gas, you heat it up. But when you expand a gas, it cools off.
Okay.
Okay, so if you really think about our storms, what are they? They're cold fronts, right? They're low pressure cold fronts. And that's the opposite. And so all of our energy in our storms comes from low pressure and cold air, which is, as an engineer, if you want to put energy into a gas, you typically have to compress it and heat it up. So what nature does is the opposite. When you have a cold front or a low pressure system coming through, that's when you get your biggest storms, right? So you have to think a little backwards, but I have this theory that our weather is actually triggered by inflation of the vacuum.
Well, look,
in our surroundings.
Well, let me ask you this. What about you're sort of talking about, it's kind of an astrophysical cosmological hypothesis of the expanding universe,
yeah,
that, from the Big Bang, but there was an opposing theory called steady state that was advanced by astronomer Thomas Gold, and then there's another theory that ties in with the ancient Hindu beliefs that they said that it's cyclical, that the earth, that the universe expands, but then at a certain point it reaches a maximum point of inflation, and then it starts to deflate and to come back in reverse back again down into itself. And do you think something like that could be possible? And how would we know if and when?
So here's what I think.
Could it come back the other way?
Inflating or expanding, but it's also decaying at the same time. And it just happens that the inflation in certain areas is greater than the decay. You know, all particles, if you follow the standard model, they decay over time, right? So if you think of space as being a big particle, which I'm not saying it is, but I'm saying it inflates, you know, the vacuum inflation, they say, is it inflates from maybe a higher vacuum level, and then it decays to a lower vacuum. So because we're potentially in a metastable universe, so the vacuum may not be stable.
Yes, okay? But what if it started shrinking back?
What I'm saying is I don't think it is stable, and I think it's actually triggering space weather and our weather, because you get these areas of inflation and you get weather.
Yes,
okay?
Well, let me ask you this, but what you're describing would be in various forms, this would be a constant over the whole time that the Earth has existed.
So I think the Earth goes through periods of inflation. I think the Earth itself is creating, and its inflation is what we're actually seeing. That the Earth is really an energy, like think of it as an energy field that's expanding, and that's why you get new islands and volcanoes flowing, and a lot of our storms are actually vacuum inflation. So I think we're just the Earth is like a higher energy vacuum. You know, they call it brain. Have you heard of brain world scenario?
No.
Physics?
No.
So they have these brains of different dimensions, so you can go higher and higher dimensions. And so I've tried to fit my model to like a brain world vacuum inflation model. And what we actually is, we're walking through, you know, in our backyard, we think we're just walking through space, right? When in actuality, we're actually moving through space-time, which is a little bit unstable, and it's inflating all the time. And when it inflates a lot, you get bad weather.
Well, here we might be moving through some lava, too.
Say that again?
Here we might be, in addition to moving through space-time, we might be wading through some lava as well.
Yeah, that's just a different form of it.
Well, look, let me ask you this. We've got about 13 minutes left on the show, and that's plenty of time. I wanted to ask you to reach into the depths of your creative subconscious and speculate on what this planet might be like 100 and then 1,000 and then say 1,000,000 years from now. Based on trends and patterns that you perceive.
So I think it's great that the world's becoming connected, right? And you don't have to buy into the media anymore. You can get your information where you want to get it. Because the media is just a lot of it's just propaganda, right? You know, Trump calls it fake news. I call it just propaganda mostly. They want your clicks.
It's a product.
Google AdWords credit.
It's a product.
But the good news there's a lot of science and information available to everybody that has access. And so what I honestly think that humans are going to realize that certain of these military technologies that they've embraced, like radiation, are very unhealthy for us. And actually, I got an honorable mention in a science paper that got published that, you know, they're already finding out that, you know, microwave radiation and EMF causes increase in cancer, right? Brain cancers, this and that.
But that's,
so that's
a,
nothing new.
That's
man.
a new business to capitalize on.
Yeah, but this paper that I said, well, if we're looking for intelligent life in the universe, let's say they've been around 1,000 years longer than we are ever, you know, 10 million. If they're really intelligent, would they be using a technology that causes cancer and kills them? And I think the answer is no.
Well,
so I think the reason we're not finding intelligent creatures using radio waves in the universe is because they're smarter than that.
Exactly. Well, see, but this was exactly what I told all the SETI astronomers when I was communicating with them back in the early 90s. Because I went like, look around. There's intelligent life all over this planet, but it's what we call biological life, and they don't use microwaves. Correct me if I'm wrong, but microwaves only exist naturally from like the background radiation in the creation of the universe. There's no natural microwaves in the Earth's environment.
But
anybody that, and see, we can't necessarily equate intelligence, because intelligence just means that you're smart enough to build all this shit, not have the wisdom to know whether to not use it or not.
That's a very big... ETs are going to be vomiting huge amounts of EMF and radiation into their atmosphere, and I quite honestly think the opposite. They probably have learned millennia ago that it kills them.
Well, but how about this? The reason all the aliens we see on the movies and TV, they look like humans, but they're all disrupted with weird growths on their head and stuff, that's because they were the ones that kept using the microwaves. No, but that's a very good point, but...
Vision of the way that we're so superior and so smart, and I think, you know, I think we're wrong.
Well, look, let me ask you this. Did you ever watch The Outer Limits? Remember that TV show?
You know, I remember it. I don't know that I watched it a lot.
Well, look, I'm going to send you a link to watch the very first episode of it when it very first came out. And I saw this on TV when I was like in the first grade, and it scared the Jesus out of me. But what it was, there was this relates to what we're talking about. There was a scientist, and he and his brother owned a big radio station in Southern California with a giant transmitter, and he was doing all these experiments with microwaves, and he had dialed in, he had found something that he could communicate with that was out there, and he dialed in, and he kept sucking the power off the radio station so that the ability, the distance they could transmit, like dropped way down, and they were losing their advertisers and stuff. And his wife was pleading with him to get out of there. And he goes like, "Honey, do you realize that every major advance in science in the past 30 years has been in the field of microwaves?" And he talks about all this stuff. And what happened was he had got in communication with a being from the Andromeda galaxy who was himself a renegade researcher, and they were both doing stuff they weren't supposed to do. And they got in touch with each other, and this dude, the power level accidentally got jacked up while he had to go to this party, and the radio, the microwave galaxy being actually came through. First he was like this three-dimensional field in a box, but he actually came through and went for a walkabout through the town. But he wasn't bad, because they tried firing their guns at him and all this stuff, and it didn't do anything. So then, but they accidentally shot. They fired a bullet and it shot the scientist's wife in the neck, and she was going to die. So the galaxy being came, and first he used his energy to heal her. He healed her bullet wound, and then he went outside and he shot his finger up in the air, and it made the radio tower fall down. And then he said to the people, "Return to your homes and ponder the mysteries of the universe." But it's brilliant. That's one of the best science fiction things I've ever seen.
No, I don't remember that.
You know what? If I put a link, if I send you that link, will you put it on your blog?
Yeah, send me a link too.
Yeah.
I'll look at it.
Well, look, we've just got a few more minutes. I mean, do you need to go right now?
No, I got a couple more minutes.
Well, look, what's your big picture of all this? Do you think that...
Hey, you can start studying without me.
What does it all mean?
What does it all mean?
if anything.
You mean life?
What's your message to humanity?
Awaken.
Wake up and stay awake, rather than wake up and then go right back to sleep because you were scared.
Get your head out of your iPod, your iPhone.
Yes, Well, this is a final thing to ask you about. What about Nikola Tesla? I have a lot of ambivalence toward that person. A lot of people deify him. They worship him as this god that was like, you know, that gave us electricity and had all these inventions and stuff. But when you look at what he really did, sure, electricity, we wouldn't be having this conversation now without electricity. We wouldn't have computers. But the Earth and all the non-human life forms, and including us, would probably be a lot better off and a lot healthier if electricity, artificial electricity, never came into being.
Yeah, I think we'd be healthier. Yeah, I just did like one or two posts on him, and one of them was, hey guys, I was just joking when I said you should put all that EMF into the atmosphere, or all that voltage.
Well, but how about this? I read that he said, people asked him where he got his ideas from, and I don't think he actually said that it was alien beings that gave it to him, but he did say that he scribed them from the ether. It's like he sort of read, he was able to sort of transcribe these ideas from the ether and stuff. But I mean, if you look at it, regardless of whether we have alternating current or direct current, which I think was the big conflict between Edison and Tesla, either way, all that's made possible not only the electrification of the planet, but also the existence of computers, in which, you know, gerrymander said that, you know, sure, we could destroy the world before computers, but since the advent of computers, it's made it much more likely, because it's enabled the scale of everything to just grow enormously, and you would know that firsthand through all the the different kind of stuff that the company you work for does. They manage nuclear reactor sites and gold mines and all different kind of huge scale industrial stuff.
Yeah, so I don't know exactly what your question was there, but
Mother Earth might have to just unplug us.
Well, I think it's just a bad idea about putting a lot of voltage in the atmosphere. I don't think it's healthy.
Well, I read that one of Tesla's ideas was to actually broadcast electric power like as a beam instead of having the high tension power lines. And
the military does it. They call it electronic warfare.
Well, I read that some corporation in Japan successfully did it, but I mean, that would just instantly fry anything that got in the path of the beam.
Exactly, that's what we're doing now. You know, when they cranked up the military, the radar, they melted someone's candy bar in their pocket, and they said, oh, let's use it for a microwave oven. And then when they cranked it up in the atmosphere and it cooked things, they said, let's use it for electronic warfare. So,
yes. Well, look, let's wrap this up. I want to thank you, Stuart Simonson, for sharing your brilliant information. And maybe you can send me some of those links that we were talking about to these specific articles, especially related to the volcanic activity, electromagnetism, and Tesla, and the cancer thing there in Huntersville. I think I remember seeing something from that a year or so ago. But I'll probably be back to Hawaii in a few months or less than a year, and maybe... What if you guys could come down here then, and we could all go over to Kauai and catch up with Terry, and I could film an interview with all three of us in person?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
We could visit the volcanoes. Hopefully the Big Island will still be inhabitable by then.
Yeah. We got to fish some car automobiles and stuff out of Hanalei Bay there.
Yes, exactly. And
cars washed into it.
Oh, my God. Well, look, man, thank you so much for everything. This is Jeff Weverson signing off for On the Brink Radio. And send beautiful love for everybody here on the Big Island. Thank you.